This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Mike Dubusky. Political leaders at home and abroad are paying tribute to former President Jimmy Carter, who passed away yesterday at his Georgia home. Among them, President Biden, who knew Carter for more than 50 years.
This is a sad day, but it brings back an incredible amount of good memories. Today, America and the world, in my view, lost a remarkable leader.
Former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi memorializing the 39th president as well.
He was, almost saintly in his goodness.
Public observances are scheduled in Georgia and in Washington, D.C. A state funeral is set for next Thursday. The black boxes have been recovered from that passenger jet that crashed in South Korea over the weekend. Investigators are hoping to learn more from those devices about what caused the plane to come down without landing gear, exploding and killing 179 people. This is ABC News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For AM 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Dense fog the last couple of days has led to difficult driving conditions in the Cooley region. With more on how to drive in foggy weather, here's Civic Media meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
Most cars are equipped with fog lights. This is the time to use them. Using your car's high beams can severely decrease your visibility because the stronger beams reflect off the water particles in the fog and make it appear denser. Also, use your windshield wipers. They'll help keep the glass clear even if it's not raining. Putting them on the lowest possible setting should work well. And turn on your defroster because fog occurs in high humidity. This will help dry off the inside of your car's windows. And drive slow. Keep a lookout for other vehicles. Never slam on your brakes and keep a longer following distance. The time between you and other cars should be 9 to 12 seconds in dense fog. And if you feel disoriented, pull over to the side of the road and put your hazard lights on.
It's expected to be foggy in the Cooley region for the next few days, even after the dense fog advisory expires. A former United States president passed away over the weekend. With more, here's Civic Media's Lisa Hale.
Jimmy Carter, the 39th president of the United States, has passed away at 100 years old. In 2002, Carter received the Nobel Peace Prize for his diplomatic work with the Carter Center. He was also very active in building hundreds of homes for Habitat for Humanity. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers released a statement that said, quote, "Former President Carter was a committed and dedicated advocate for peace, human rights, and treating others with dignity, decency, and respect. Qualities that earned him respect and admiration from many across our country and around the world." President Carter died at his home in Plains, Georgia.
Carter served one term as president after being elected in 1976.
You can take Civic Media with you anywhere you go with the free Civic Media app. Download it now at civicmedia.us/app. From the Civic Media newsroom in Western Wisconsin, I'm Jimmy Cuska for AM 1490 WLCX and lacrosseeagle.com.
The Packers are swept by the Vikings. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. For the second time this season, the Packers lost to the Vikings, again by just 2 points, the final 27-25 at U.S. Bank Stadium. Packers running back Josh Jacobs asked if the team has lost any confidence after being swept by both the Lions and now the Vikings this season.
Not at all. I told our guys at halftime, believe in ourselves. At the end of the day, like I said, we did a lot of things I feel like was on us. So I told our guys, believe in ourselves. I don't think it was nobody in here that believed that we were just going to lose. I think everybody had the belief that we was going to pull it out some type of way. We just fell short today.
The Packers will host the Bears next Sunday at noon. Men's college hockey. The Badgers beat the UConn Huskies 4-3 to win the holiday faceoff at Five Serve Forum in Milwaukee. It's the third time in 4 years Wisconsin has won the tournament. NBA, the Bucks are in Indianapolis tomorrow afternoon against the Pacers on New Year's Eve. Tip-off time at 2 p.m. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
It is foggy again this morning. It is going to stay cloudy here through the day today with a high in the upper 30s this afternoon. Tonight, cloudy into the upper 20s. Tomorrow, cloudy, cooler in the low 30s. We're going to drop our highs into the low 20s by Wednesday. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 28.
Do you know or work with kids who have special health care needs? Help them live their best lives. Contact Wisconsin Wayfinder Children's Resource Network. Our specialists will connect you with services in your area. Wisconsin Wayfinder is free and confidential. Call 877-947-2929 or visit dhs.wi.gov/WISCWAY. Connect today. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
The Todd Alba Show.
UW Systems spends $51 million of our taxpayer money for consultants. Three times the budget shortfall that triggered the Oshkosh layoffs in 2023. Why is there such silence from Democrats in the state capitol on this? Ask people in Richland Center, Waukesha, Washington County, if they got their $51 million worth for the UW system.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Appleton-based comedian John Egan into the studio. Then Chicago comedians Bill Gorgo and Jim McHugh join the show to promote a New Year's Eve extravaganza in Port Washington. Let's light it up.
Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Up North News Radio.
All right, welcome back to a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. That's 855-752-4842. I'm always on it for my next guest to have on, Mr. Alan Borsak. He is a senior fellow in law and public policy at Marquette University. He's an award-winning journalist that focuses a lot on education policy. Good morning to you, my friend. How are you?
I am good. How are you?
And happy Hanukkah to you.
Oh, well, thank you. You know, everybody's having a good holiday season and start of a good, sweet year ahead, a healthy year ahead for everybody, I hope.
Yes, sir. So I have to, every time I read your articles about Milwaukee Public Schools, which you've been writing for a long, long time. I'm a product of Milwaukee Public Schools. I had 11 sisters and brothers who graduated from Milwaukee Public Schools. My mom retired from Milwaukee Public Schools. I volunteered 12 years in Milwaukee Public Schools. Countless nieces and nephews and my children went to Milwaukee Public Schools. So it's safe to say I'm invested in Milwaukee Public Schools. And I live in the city of Milwaukee, and I've lived there my entire life, Alan, and I'm going to die there. So I am interested in everything that happens in Milwaukee Public Schools. And it's unfortunate, because I've been a total supporter of the district all of my life. But Alan, I've never seen it in the condition it's in now, and you wrote another great article about where it stands now, and you've written many articles. But right now, with all the different articles and all you know about the district, where would you say that Milwaukee Public Schools, the largest school district in the entire state, stands?
Well, I think on the on the good news side, there are still students, such, you know, your nieces and nephews and your own family's experience. There's still people who are getting a good education and going to good schools and having good teachers. The problem, of course, is that there's just not enough of them. Overall, the district, I agree with you, is in a very difficult situation, could well be the most difficult of all the time that I've been following, which, depending on what you use as a starting point, you could even count up to 50 years. I'm so old, like you said, senior fellow. But yes, they have so many problems and so many challenges, and so many bad things happened in the course of 2024. not only the financial mess, which got so much attention, but there's actually a list of things, even to not succeeding in getting a couple of football teams into the state tournament. I mean, how bad is that?
Yeah.
I really felt for all these athletes at those schools who through no fault of their own, right. But in any case, they have problems on problems. They've got problems with the legislature. They got problems with the community and the community leadership. But most of all, they got problems just running an education system and seeing enough success.
You know, Alan,
not enough success.
It is an issue for the entire state of Wisconsin. It can't possibly be isolated solely to the city of Milwaukee. Milwaukee's the biggest city in the state, but it's also has the largest school district, and all of these children who become adults, Alan, and so it's an issue that is bigger than just the city. Is it safe to say that?
Oh, I totally agree. I think there are a lot of people who would not agree. They'd say, I got mine. My kids are going to good schools. My kids don't live in the city of Milwaukee, don't face the issues that you have in the urban setting. You know, I'm rich. I'm in the suburbs. I'm in other parts of the state. And hooray for kids who are getting a good education. But yes, if MPS is not doing well, that's something that affects the entire state. It affects the economy, affects the future. I mean, the biggest cliche in education is that kids are the future. Well, it's true. And if you got lots of kids who aren't learning to read, write, and become productive citizens, ultimately, that's something that weighs down the whole state.
You know, Alan, let's look at a couple different things that I think have had a tremendous impact on the district itself. You know, vouchers and choice, which were actually created in the city of Milwaukee. In long term, when I was in Milwaukee Public Schools, Alan, there was 110,000, 120,000 students, baby boomers. They built all of those schools because of baby boomers. And so the district was set to deal with over 100,000 students, and it was able to have that for the better part of maybe three, maybe 40 years. But with all the different challenges and the different school systems that are now with us, Alan, Milwaukee Public Schools has certainly lost almost 50% of the students who went to the district. And now it faces an uncertain future, certainly because many kids have left the district. But the district is dealing with buildings that are archaic, costs of maintaining those buildings, which are kind of like an albatross around the neck of the district, and an uncertain future because of a school board that is responsible for dealing with a budget of $1.4 billion that's equivalent to the budget of Milwaukee County.
Yeah, everything you said there is pretty much true. At this point, I think 52 to 53% of the children who are going to kindergarten through 12th grade, getting publicly supported education, and who live in the city of Milwaukee, are doing that in the Milwaukee public school system, which is to say only just a couple points over half. And that means that half of the kids are going to private schools using vouchers, charter schools, various ways of being created, and some of them excellent, but some of them not so great. And there's also something around 5,000 who live in the city of Milwaukee, who are going to public school and are doing it in the suburbs through using the state's open enrollment law. In fact, I wrote a piece that hasn't been published yet in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about the state of open enrollment in Wisconsin. It's pushing 10% of all kids in the state are using open enrollment, And in Milwaukee, it's quite high.
Well, because there are suburbs.
Using open enrollment.
I focus on St. Francis.
It's quite high.
And there are suburbs
where almost 50% of the kids in the district actually live in the city of Milwaukee or a couple other nearby suburbs like West Allis. So in any case, yes, MPS has lost a lot of strength. One of the things that's not really MPS's fault is that they end up with a disproportionate number of
special ed
kids,
right,
and kids with major discipline problems. That said, if you look at the big picture, one of the things MPS hasn't done for 30 years now is make it their schools overall an appealing choice to people. It is a choice world when it comes to schools, and MPS has to figure out more how to get more people to choose MPS. There are certain schools where that happens, mostly specialty schools and schools with what they call selective admission. Reagan High School on the South Side is a prime example at the moment. But, you know, people aren't choosing to go to MPS in enough numbers to keep the district strong.
So if you're just joining us, I'm joined by Alan Borsick. He is a Marquette University Law fellow, and he, you know, renowned award-winning journalist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and he just wrote an article that I was reading the other day, and it was, "Who Will Step Up to Lead MPS? Superintendent Search Reopens, and Most School Board Members Up for Election Don't Plan to Run Again." You know, Alan, you and I talked a little bit about this the other day. If you want to be a school board member, they pay $20,000. A budget that's $1.4 billion, equivalent to Milwaukee County, dealing with just horrific types of circumstances with so many young people failing. And the social issues that impact and affect the students that go to Milwaukee Public Schools. I don't think people really know, as I said before, I spent 12 years volunteering there. The social issues, that impact the students before they even come to school, Alan, is a big issue. The district has become a social service agency before it can even begin to educate. And yet it is measured as a school that is not doing what it can to educate students, and people dismiss the total fact that they have to feed children before they even do anything else. They have to clothe children before they do anything else. Kids come to school without socks. Kids come to school without coats. They come to school without hats and gloves. They come to school hungry. In many of the schools, the kids are there from 6, 7 a.m. in the morning until 7 p.m. It's the only place they can feel safe and get a meal, Alan. And yet none of those things are taken into consideration when people judge Milwaukee Public Schools. Hold the thought. 855-752-4842. My guest is the one and only Alan Borsick. And Alan Borsick is a senior fellow in law and public policy and award-winning journalist for the Milwaukee Milwaukee Journal. 855-752-4842 is the number. So Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Matinee on Air.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. As 2024 comes to a close, we're taking our annual look back at the year that was, recapping our most read, most listened to, and most impactful stories of the year. If you're new to learning about the recombobulation area, this would be a great place to start to see what we're all about. This year, we covered the RNC in Milwaukee and the DNC in Chicago and broke stories that made national news along the way. We wrote about the fight for fair maps and covered elections in the state legislature like no one else. I wrote opinion columns and feature stories and conducted extended sit-down interviews like one with Senator Tammy Baldwin. I hosted podcasts and radio shows, and of course, joined the Civic Media Network, where you've heard me all over the airwaves for the last few months. This last year was discombobulating at times, but we did our best to make sense of it all, and we've got a whole lot more recombobulation in store for the year ahead in 2025.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Rudolph is a holiday classic, and there's a Wisconsin connection. Maury Laws composed music for the animated show in 1964. He continued arranging hundreds of songs from his Appleton home after leaving New York 20 years later. During that time, Laws created one quirky pop song. Do you know what it is? The answer coming up.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, sort of where a lot of people's core Christmas memories come from.
Emily Locke with the Oshkosh Museum on holiday traditions around Rudolph. Laws worked for the TV production company behind the show and also wrote music for Frosty the Snowman. And about the silly song he composed. Yes, itsy bitsy teeny weeny yellow polka dot bikini. Laws died in 2019 at the age of 95, but his music lives on as a wonderful slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is the Talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
Skin. Run, 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 but you sure can't hide.
An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Vote for me and I'll set you free. Rap on, brother, rap on.
All right, welcome back to Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. That's 855-752-4842. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Mr. Alan Borsick. He is a senior fellow in law and public policy at Marquette University Law School. And you wrote this article the other day in the Milwaukee that appeared on December 27th. And you asked, right now, there are very few people who's going to step up and fight for the district. Now, some of the things that have happened to the district, Alan, as you've written, self-imposed. Let's talk a little bit about those things.
The financial mess is the best example.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about those things.
Well, you're right from what you were saying before the break, that there's tremendous needs and problems for children in the city that are outside of MPS and that often end up in the lap of teachers and secretaries and social workers and such at schools. But they do have their own problems that MPS has created, and they're largely up there at the top leadership level. The financial mess that came to light in late May and early June, right after a huge referendum was passed sharply increasing property taxes in the city. And there are many people, and I'm not entirely exempt from including myself, who think that that was hushed up until after the referendum passed. They basically had a meltdown of their whole finance department. Well, that's bad. I mean, it's like inexcusably bad. But they've had other problems too. They lost the Head Start contract. That was really an important contract for them and an important thing for kids in the city. They're not the only Head Start provider, but that was a loss, including a loss of enrollment and of bringing families in who then continue on past early childhood. They've just had so much turnover in the top administration. You know, the consultant that's working on the superintendent search did a lot of interviews with people in all different roles in the community, including people who were working in the central administration. And her report said that many of the people she talked to complained that nepotism, which is to say favoritism in hiring, was a big problem in central office. that the best people for the job were not necessarily getting jobs there. Like I said, the revolving door in the last few years at the top of the administration, they have problems with recruiting teachers, keeping teachers, leadership of buildings. I mean, who the principals are in schools are huge factors in determining how successful a school is. And all of these problems have just been festering. And now you've got an extremely difficult and sensitive issue of whether to close schools, because there are many schools in the city that are startlingly under-enrolled. I mean, have 200 students in a building for 700 would be an example. And it gets especially sensitive because the north side has seen an exodus of population and an exodus of kids. And even the kids who are there are often going to schools well outside their neighborhood. So the problem with closing schools is very much focused on the under-enrolled schools on the north side, whereas the south side schools are generally over-enrolled. And so this becomes very tricky in terms of community politics, in terms of sensitivities along neighborhood, race, class, you name it. So they're still facing this closing issue, and they're still facing so many other problems, special ed needs, and then the security issue involving the state legislature, that they haven't put police officers in the schools as is required by state law at the moment. So just this whole long list of problems, all of them formidable.
You know, Alan, you and I have been around a while, so we understand the intricacies of the north side and the south side in Milwaukee as it relates to education. The north side, predominantly black side of town, south side, predominantly white side of town. And so the quality, the arguments have been that there are more resources going to the south side and those schools than go to the schools on the north side. And so it's a delicate balancing act that the school board is responsible for. And we can talk about...
I would amend what you said. The south side is really no longer very white.
I know, but what I'm saying is the majority of people, black people, live on the north side of town.
Yeah. Well,
and those are the schools that they're talking about shutting down. The majority of the schools that they're talking about, those are the underserved schools. And so
the 13 schools that the consultant they hired this process focused on are all on the north side. I think six of them are in 53206.
Right.
It's a geographic time bomb.
Yeah, it's a geographic time bomb, and it requires somebody who is cognizant and lucid enough to understand the dynamics of what and the times that we're in, especially because you and I remember the times from the 60s and the 70s. That hasn't gone away. So we're going to get into, as we move forward, school board members who are leaving and not being able to find people to take their place. Again, I'm joined by Mr. Alan Borsig. He is a senior fellow in law and policy at Marquette University Law School and an award-winning journalist from Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. 855-752-4842. On a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, Lacrosse's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
For AM 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
One person was taken to the hospital after falling through the ice on the Black River near Fisherman's Road. Two people who were ice fishing went through the ice and were pulled out of the water by bystanders. The La Crosse Fire Department said that given the recent stretch of warmer weather, the ice may not be thick enough to go out on yet. La Crosse County Public Safety officials said that if you do go out on the ice, to be aware of changing ice conditions due to the weather. After a brief bump before Christmas, gas prices are right back to where they were since mid-October. With more, here's Civic Media's Melissa Kay.
Gas prices fell again last week, dropping 5.9 cents per gallon for an average of 2.75 across the state. This is 2.7 cents per gallon lower than a month ago and 5.7 cents higher than this time last year. 2024 marks the second year in a row of declining prices on the national level as we close out the year. We may see some hikes at gas stations over the next week in our area. Officials at Gas Buddy expect another price cycle in the Great Lakes region, but overall, the national average should remain mostly stable.
The average price of a gallon of gas in the La Crosse area is the same as the statewide average, while across the border in Houston County, the average price is about $2.85 per gallon. A teenager from La Crosse was cited for operating while intoxicated after crashing a vehicle in Crawford County. According to the Crawford County Sheriff's Office, a 17-year-old boy was driving an SUV on Highway 18 when he went off of the road and hit several trees. The vehicle caught on fire and was put out by Bridgeport fire officials. The teenager was hurt in the crash but was able to get out of the vehicle. The boy was also cited for failing to keep a vehicle under control in addition to OWI. In weather, after the dense fog advisory expires, it's still expected to be foggy for the next couple of days in the Coulee region.
You can take Civic Media with you anywhere you go with the free Civic Media app. Download it now at civicmedia.us/app. From the Civic Media Newsroom in Western Wisconsin, I'm Jimmy Cuska for AM 1490 WLCX and lacrosseeagle.com.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. Here's one of Pete's picks, Wisconsin. Check out the film Conclave. The film tells the story of the cardinals converging on Rome to select the next pope. Ray Fiennes is our access character who manages the whole scene as potential candidates jockey for position to become the next pontiff. Lots of unexpected twists and great storytelling. In addition to Fiennes, the film stars John Lithgow, Stanley Tucci, and Isabella Rossellini. Just under 2 hours, but doesn't feel like it. Check it out. So much TV to watch, so little time. If you're a horror fan, check out TheWrap.com's recent list of the best horror episodic TV shows from 2024, which include AMC's Interview with a Vampire Season 2, Paramount Plus's Last Season of Evil, which The Wrap called an almost perfect show. Walking Dead fans will be thrilled to hear that Rick and Michonne's show, The Ones Who Live, was also on the list, as was a show many horror fans have talked about called What We Do in the Shadows. Check out the full list and watch them all. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
It is foggy again this morning. It is going to stay cloudy here through the day today with a high in the upper 30s this afternoon. Tonight, cloudy into the upper 20s. Tomorrow, cloudy, cooler in the low 30s. We're going to drop our highs into the low 20s by Wednesday. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 28.
Let's get back to live music in the lair with Kaylin Cole. The next song you have for us tonight is called 1103. Yes. Is that a time or a flight number?
Oh, that's actually really good. That's a good idea. I think I might have to write another song with that. You'll get 50%.
It's live in the lair. Grab the podcast now at maxincradio.com and listen live on Saturday night, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Pat Kreitlow.
Well, not exactly. No Pat Kreitlow Monday or Tuesday, but you'll have Greg Bach and Dr. Kristen Lyerly, so you better tune in. I better tune in.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
All right, welcome back to a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. My guest is Mr. Alan Borsak. He's a senior fellow in law and public policy at Marquette University Law School, an award-winning journalist, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Is it 40 years yet?
I started at the Milwaukee Journal in 1972.
That's that's 52 years.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I know about 1972. That's the year I graduated from Milwaukee Public Schools. So, but we were talking about the fact that right now we talk about all these other things that impact and affect the district. Right now, nothing more impactful than a school board that has the responsibility of making all these things happen. They're in search right now for a superintendent. I've got a guy who sent a question, asked what he thinks the salient qualities needed to run and lead MPS, and does that candidate exist in the current pool?
Well, there are multiple questions there. Nobody knows outside of the tightest circle there who's in the current group. There were more than 30 people who applied to be superintendent.
From across the nation? From across the nation?
Presumably, yeah. I mean, it was a
nationwide search.
Large-scale search. So what is known is that the board met... I got to get my timings right. I think it's 2 weeks ago now, in a closed session on a Tuesday night, and then to review the applicants and the consultant they're using. It's a well-known national firm that does superintendent searches, had narrowed the list to who they recommended. But then the next day, in a surprise development, they put out a news release saying they were reopening the search, which certainly didn't speak well for what they thought of the current group. Now, it doesn't mean they couldn't go back to someone in that group, but they obviously weren't satisfied with this roughly three dozen applicants. Is this going to be a really tough job to fill as far as getting someone with something bordering on superpowers? Yes. There's so many challenges, but who's in there and what they're looking for isn't, it doesn't sound like it's going very well.
Go ahead.
Yes. No, I was going to say, and then you got the state of the school board itself, which is not getting enough attention for what a problem that is, in my view. You have four seats in the school board are up for election this coming spring. And as of the end of the day, Friday, I haven't looked yet this morning, there was one person who had applied, who had notified the City Election Commission of their intent to run in each of the four districts. So there's no contested races. It was only on Friday that anybody applied for one of the races. And as it is, there's no one on the school board who's been there longer than 4 years. The 2019 is the most is the longest ago that the current members were elected. So it's really not a very experienced board. I think people who watch the board worry that it's really not a very effective group. They haven't really taken command. They you don't listen to them and think, boy, I'm feeling good about who's running this district. Of these four races for this spring, three of them are incumbents just finishing one term who are not running for re-election, including a couple of them who were really the better members of the board, the most active and the ones who asked the best questions, and had taken some leadership even in the amid the financial mess last spring and summer. And then the fourth one was Aisha Carr from the Northside School Board District Four, I think that is five, right. I forget. And she was pretty much forced off the board pushing a year ago, both because she had become, her relationships with the rest of the board had been very contentious. She was kind of a maverick and asked a lot of questions that nobody else was asking, and had very prickly relations with the, dare I say, teachers union. And then she also got into legal trouble about whether she lived in the district. She's facing criminal charges related to that. So you got four new people coming in at a time when the board's facing enormous challenges, and it's the prospects for it being not a very experienced and effective, strong board are that's a real concern.
So if you
the fact that there's only four people running for four seats shows that there's not much appetite for tackling the problems of MPS.
So if you're just joining us, my guest is Alan Borsig. He's a senior fellow in law, public policy, market, University Law School, and award-winning journalist from Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and focusing a lot on education. So, Alan, what I will say to you, two things. The salary for the superintendent of Milwaukee Public Schools is over $300,000. So it certainly is appetizing. That's not the reason, excuse me, that somebody wouldn't want to take a stab at a position that pays $300,000 a year. The other side of this, I think, Alan, that is so prickly is the fact, and there are many different aspects of this, but why I think it's so important to have you on is we're dealing with, you know, teachers, the MTEA, the Milwaukee Teachers Education Association, that I believe, and again, this is me speaking, not you, and speaking from living in the city for 70 years and watching this, an inordinate amount of power over school board members. And the fact that the MTEA, the Milwaukee Teachers Education Association, when people run for school board, Alan, there's not, because of the time of year in the spring, there are not a lot of people going out to vote. And so a person can become a school board member with 200-300 votes in some areas. And when you're talking about dealing with a issue and a problem as massive as a $1.4 billion budget, and someone can get the position with only 300 votes because it's in the spring, and the fact that very few people vote for that. And then if you couple that with the fact that the MTEA, if anybody's going to vote and they live in the city, it's going to be the MTEA. And so they control, unfortunately, and have for such a long time, and this is me talking, not you, many of the school board members. And so I constantly say to people that we have people in our community, Alan, who are really upset about the school board itself. Is it time that we look at changing the governance of Milwaukee Public Schools?
That is a very good, and I might add, very timely question, because I think behind the scenes and at fairly high levels of power, both in the public sectors and in civic leaders and such, that question is being asked more and more. And there aren't, you know, the simple answers, I'm not sure, are really very effective, which would be a mayoral control, the mayor appointing
or state control board,
or a mix of local and state control. That's really not. The history in other cities that have tried that is very mixed. Some places it's worked and some it hasn't. So mayoral control, a popular one, former Governor Tommy Thompson still likes to talk it up, would be splitting up the Milwaukee district into four or five or eight smaller districts. And I think that, frankly, could become a colossal mess. I think that could be just a huge problem. If you like having one school board, you'd really like having eight.
Well, you know, Alec,
for example, but just the enrollment picture, the web of places that kids go to school compared to where they live would be very, very difficult.
The mayor,
in any case, there are no simple answers.
The mayor doesn't want to have anything to do with it. Okay, he hasn't shown any signs that this is something that he wants on his plate. And I understand that. And the state doesn't want to really have to deal with this because there's almost a no-win situation because at the root of a lot of it, again, is the social issues, Alan, that permeate the district. And so very few people want to deal with that aspect of it. It's easy to point. Again, I'm speaking from the perspective of somebody who volunteered 12 years and was up close and personal and saw it. And so they don't want to deal with that aspect of it because many students in Milwaukee Public Schools are homeless. Many students in Milwaukee Public Schools are transient.
Live unstable lives,
yes,
which in itself match up with a poor educational outcome.
And live in war zones.
I'd say two things about the mayoral situation. Milwaukee hasn't had a mayor in our lifetimes, and we're both old, that waded into education issues, with the exception of John Norquist.
Right.
And Norquist was largely advocate of the school choice programs, but he did get involved in school issues. Other than that, certainly Tom Barrett didn't want to. Henry Meyer didn't want to. So there's a long history of mayor, and by the system, the mayor has no direct role in running the schools. Mayor Johnson says this is a very important issue and he wants to be involved, but he has actually not done anything I would regard as particularly bold or really speaking to major change so far. Could that change? I mean, the system's in a state of crisis that it may be an exaggeration, but it's tempting to call it unprecedented. So will he be drawn into it? Will the governor be drawn into it? Will the legislative leaders, Republicans, be drawn into it in ways they might not choose to, but they're going to have to because the district is so troubled. So the mayor so far, Mayor Johnson, has not done anything particularly bold in reaction to the current situation.
You know, Alan, it's one of those pay me now or pay me later situations. And it didn't just get there. But with all... go ahead, sir.
The other thing I would say is show me a city in America where there's been a surge of energy and to some degree at least progress on the local school scene, and I'll show you a mayor who's really engaged. In some cases, because they had control, but even in some cases where they didn't have direct control, the bully pulpit that comes with being a mayor can be really important. But Boston, Chicago, like, you can keep naming cities, big time education mayors. And we have not had that in Milwaukee, except, as I said, for John Norquist.
All right, 855-752-4842. My guest is Alan Borsick. He is a senior fellow in law and public policy, Marquette University Law School, and an award-winning journalist from Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We're talking about Milwaukee Public Schools, 855-752-4842. On a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show.
You're listening to the Talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM. The Dom Salvia Show.
How about this one? Harvey Kay, a Delano Democrat.
The problem with that is that was his mother's family name. You might not realize that he had a father, too.
Come on, man.
Subscribe to my arguments, and you can call a Dom Democrat.
All right, I'll take a Dom Democrat. But Franklin Delano Roosevelt, a big favorite here on this show.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. And now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart. Heart and brain. Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
The Todd Allbus Show.
UW Systems spends $51 million of our taxpayer money for consultants. Three times the budget shortfall that triggered the Oshkosh layoffs in 2023. Why is there such silence from Democrats in the state capitol on this? Ask people in Richland Center, Waukesha, Washington County, if they got their $51 million worth for the UW system.
The Todd Allbus Show. Weekdays, noon till 2, on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Wisconsin's home for daily conversations about the state's latest headlines and stories.
Weekday mornings from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, Lacrosse's home for the Todd Allbus Show.
All right, welcome back to the last few minutes of a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. My guest is Alan Borsig. So, Alan, let me propose this to you. So here we are, the wealthiest nation on earth, or one of the wealthiest nations on earth, and education is something that we continue to lag, not just in urban centers, but if you look globally, America continues to falter as it relates to educating its children. Now, whether or not we prioritize enough in our society like we used to when you and I were young, I don't think we do. And so the failure of children to be educated in the Central City or Milwaukee public schools at a time, Alan, when there's a global technological world that we're in, is a major problem that I think this nation needs to refocus on. It's not just Milwaukee Public Schools problems. It's a fact that, and we now have a president that's talking about doing away with the Department of Education. Your thoughts, sir?
And we just yesterday lost the president who created the Department of Education in the late 1970s. There was one of these international studies, which some people disparage them, but I tend to take them fairly seriously, just came out a couple weeks ago, and the U.S. Accomplishments in math overall, the status of math proficiency for school kids across the country was had fallen and was definitely not in the upper bracket of nations across the globe. If anything, things had gone backwards from a few years ago, which certainly the pandemic is a factor in that. But yes, internationally, American education isn't all that rosy. Yeah, it's a reflection of the priority that is put on it. What's going to happen under President Trump? He says he wants to wipe out the education department. Frankly, I think that's going to be much more difficult than just saying that. They're going to need 60 votes in the U.S. Senate, and the Democrats are going to oppose it. The Republicans don't have 60 votes. And many of the things the education department does, like college aid and Pell Grants and Title I and Head Start are actually pretty popular. So it's not going to be that simple yet. Are things going to get better as far as really, you know, I'd love to see systems, state, national, local, that really focus on, let's teach the kids to read. Let's teach the kids to do math. Let's teach the kids the background knowledge, the state of the world, everything, languages that prepare them for success as adults. And we're just not seeing that from, frankly, either party too much.
Well, you know, Alan, we know how to do it because we used to do it.
And because there's still schools that do succeed.
Right.
You know, how many schools does it take that succeed in central city settings to say that it can be done? If there's one, if there's four, if there's 10, even if there's 100 that don't, you say, what can we learn from those 10 or so schools, which there are in Milwaukee?
Well, you know, you can look at Dr. Fuller's school right in the heart of an area where they say Black students can't learn, Black children can't learn, they can't be educated. Right up the street is North Division of Milwaukee Public Schools, where Black children go. That is horrific, to say the least. And yet, here's a school that's also in that same zip code that is thriving. So it can be done, Alan. It's whether or not, I guess, you know, Dr. Fuller's school is different. He doesn't have to deal with what Milwaukee Public Schools has to deal with sometimes. Milwaukee Public Schools can't say no to any student. They're mandated by law to educate every child. That's not so in vouchers, charters, and other schools.
True, but they have the same kids overall that other schools do. I was just at the Howard Fuller High School 2 weeks ago, and they got plenty of kids there who have plenty of challenges. One of the things, they are relentless. Their dedication to trying to connect with these kids. I mean, Howard Fuller says over and over, I want every kid in my school to feel like they're loved. And they're good at that. So there is a determination that's there. Everyone should learn from. North Division should learn from. Are they completely successful? No. Ultimately, the charter and voucher sectors are only doing marginally better than MPS. And we still have a huge need for all the kids in the city and a need to go at it with that total dedication, relentless approach to saying we must find ways for the kids to succeed.
You know, Alan, man, I don't know what happened to the time. Always great having you on, my friend. I always say we got to do it again, but I'm going to make sure I bird dog you, because this isn't going away, and we need your counsel as we move forward. Thank you very much, my friend.
Glad to be here. Have a great new year.
You as well. I'm going to fill in for Maggie Dawn at 2 o'clock this afternoon, so I'll be back on the airwaves. Up next, Jane Madnair, Greg Bott, Madnair on Air. Thank all of you. See you guys at 2 o'clock.
Eagle 1490 AM. Dom Salvia.
Next time, what does former FBI and CIA Director William Webster have to say about Cash Patel and Tulsi Gabbard? Also, our favorite Delano Democrat, Harvey Kay, on the rise of homelessness and political exhaustion. Tune in.
The Dom Salvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. Soaring high above La Crosse.
This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Mike Dubusky. Former President Jimmy Carter is being remembered this morning. The 39th president passed away at the age of 100 yesterday. While his one term in office saw a number of foreign policy achievements, it also saw the Iran hostage crisis and troubled economic times back at home. ABC News presidential historian Mark Updegrove says after Carter left office, he became known as a philanthropist.
He said that many people will remember me as a one-term president, but it's really the work that I did, he said, at the Carter Center, his nonprofit that he launched in his post-presidency that he wanted to be remembered for.
Jimmy Carter's funeral is set for next Wednesday. Much of South Korea is in mourning. The victims of a major plane crash over the weekend, 179 people were killed when a Jeju Airlines flight came down on a runway without its landing gear deployed, then colliding with a wall. American aviation officials are assisting in the crash investigation. This is ABC News.